Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Barry Finley, author of the new novel, Searching for Truth, the first in the Jake Scott mystery series. Barry, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Good to be here.
Sure. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Searching for Truth, how would you describe the novel?
It is a new novel and a new series. I've written a series called the Marcy Kane Thriller Collection prior to this. That was a series of four books featuring a strong, independent woman. And this one is more of a middle-aged man, I guess, who has lost his wife and retired from his job. And he's kind of lonely and looking for something to do. And he kind of stumbles across a crime that's happened 2 years previous where someone has been in jail, and they may or may not be incarcerated correctly. So he, along with a female detective, follow up on the case, and it leads to some surprising results. So it's a, I'd say it's a borderline cozy, but not quite. It's, there's a certain amount of action in it, thrilling action, I think, and certainly some mystery. And it probably crosses the line over into mystery territory as opposed to being cozy.
Well, do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to write Searching for Truth and starting this new series?
Well, I've had this character floating around in my head for a while. I'm retired from work, and I've been doing a variety of things I like since I've been retired. And I had this similar character floating around in my head. He's much younger than I am, but he's gone through some of the same things. So it was that that kind of prompted me to sort of investigate this type of character and see where it goes. And I'm quite sure it's going to lead to more books in the future.
So what was your original writing journey that led you to writing and getting your first novel published in this previous series that you
just mentioned? I actually wrote financial policy for a number of years for the Canadian federal government. And nobody reads that unless they absolutely have to. But I think it kind of honed my writing skills. And I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro with my son at age 60 in 2009. And that led to, well, we did some presentations about the climb. We used the climb to raise some money to help the kids of Africa. And it led to some presentations. And I realized that there were people who were actually really interested in the story. And at the same time, before we climbed, I had looked for some books on climbing the mountain, some books that actually took you up the mountain. And I couldn't find any. So at that time. So my son and I decided to write a book about her journey, about both the climb and about the fundraising afterwards. And that it was an enjoyable process. People liked and bought the book, and that kind of encouraged me to continue on. And after that, I wrote a humorous travel memoir. And then I've always been a fan of fiction, and especially crime fiction. And so I wondered if I could do it. I'm an accountant by trade. And accountants aren't supposed to be that creative, I guess. But and if they get too creative, I think they probably end up in jail. So it was a challenge to me to see if I could write fiction. And as I said, that led to five books. And now here I am on my next thriller series.
So I'm curious, was it a big shift for you from writing financial policy to writing crime fiction and mystery fiction?
Yeah, it was a huge shift. It was when you're writing financial policy, there's nothing fictional about it. It's straightforward and pretty bland. And so what I had to do, obviously, when I'm starting to write fiction was to use my imagination and develop characters. And there were many facets to writing fiction that were completely different from what I was used to. But I think that was the challenging part. There are, and the interesting part for me, each of my thriller books has some sort of social significance, I think. And most of them are about subjects that I know nothing about. So I was forced to research the subjects. And I found that to be a very interesting part of writing as well. It's not only the writing experience, but it's the experience of preparing for the story that you're going to write. And to me, that is as enjoyable a part of writing as writing itself.
And so what is your writing process when you're working on a new mystery novel? Do you outline the novel extensively in terms of clues, et cetera, or do you just dive into the narrative?
I pretty much dive into the narrative. I've seen research people that are plotters. I saw Jeffrey Diefer speak once at a Writers' Festival here, and he talked about plotting 200 pages before he actually sat down to write. And I've never been able to do that. I start writing and let the story take me where it will. I've started with my last book, or the most recent book, Searching for Truth. I did plot it out a little bit more than I have in my previous books. I like kind of letting them go, letting the characters take me where they will, and I actually find out it's surprising sometimes where we end up. And I'm never quite sure how the story's going to end until it ends. So I find that kind of exciting too. But I do plot to a certain extent, I guess. I plot two or three chapters ahead. When I'm finished one, I plot two or three chapters ahead. And I think I've got the basic outline in my head, but it's not a matter of sitting down and actually writing out pages and pages of plot for me. It's just something I've tried a little bit and I can't do it.
Sure. Well, are you working on another novel now?
I just started playing around with another one. It's going to be another J. Scott mystery. Not that far advanced in my head, I guess, but I think it's going to have something to do with cults, and he's going to somehow become embroiled in a story about a cult.
What novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Well, right now I'm reading Clive Cussler. I particularly like Michael Connelly, and my wife and I have actually just finished the Bosch series, which we enjoyed immensely. We thought the characters were so real in that in the movie series that it was fantastic. But I really enjoy crime novels. I've got a bit of an eclectic taste, I think, when it comes to reading. I do like biographies and autobiographies as well, but I probably intersperse maybe one biography in amongst five fictional books or something like that. So, but I really enjoy the type of stories that Michael Connelly writes and Jeffrey Deaver, as I mentioned before. So it's that kind of book that I enjoy.
What writing advice would you offer for someone?
No, I was just going to say that I recently read a book by Chandler, it was written in 1934, I believe. And it was far from politically correct, but very interesting to read some of the old style mysteries and thrillers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sure. Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories and novels?
Well, I think, first of all, if someone's got a story in them, I think they should just go for it. I think, put it down on paper and see where it goes. That's basically how I started, and it turned out okay for me. But I think more than that, I think if somebody's going to spend the time writing, they really need to hire an editor. They need to set aside some money to be able to pay somebody to edit their book. Because if you're going to spend the time actually sitting and writing a book, you want to make sure it's the best thing it can possibly be. And I have to admit, when I wrote my first book, Kilimanjaro and Beyond, with my son, and sent it to the editor. I was shocked at what the editor came up with. And I'm still surprised sometimes when the editor finds things that, after I've read it 20 times, I've still missed. And I think it's so important that somebody hires an author or potential author hires an editor to make sure their book is the best it can be. The other thing I tell people who are aspiring to write is that make sure you set aside some time for marketing, time and money, because it's as much time as you spend in writing the book, you're going to have to spend an equal amount of time and effort in letting know people that the book actually exists.
Well, how did you find your editor?
That was luck. Our son is a singer-songwriter in Nashville, and he knew somebody who wrote for Billboard magazine at one time, put me in touch with her, and we connected right off the bat. And so she agreed to edit my book, and I said, I don't want somebody who's just going to pick up on typos and maybe the odd grammar mistake, sure, and that kind of thing. I'd like you to be as difficult with me as you possibly can. And she certainly was. And she told me right off the bat that we had a Zoom call, and she had read through the entire manuscript. And she told me right off the bat that I had to earn the right to preach. So I guess when I started the book, we were talking about what you need to do to be able to climb the mountain. And she said, you really need to be able to earn the right to tell somebody that you know what you're talking about. So I rearranged the book, and it turned out much better as a result. But we were fortunate to come across her. She's since pretty much retired from editing. And so I've been using other people. But I find most people are very good. If you get references for the editor you want to use, then I think you'll find a good one.
That's great. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
My webpage is www.barry-finlay.com. Finlay is Finlay.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Barry Finlay, author of the new novel, Searching for Truth, the first in the Jake Scott mystery series. The novel is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Barry, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you. Now, stay tuned for a brief excerpt from the audiobook of The Vanishing Wife, Book 1, in the Marcy Kane Thriller Collection from Barry Finlay, narrated by Trevor Finlay.
The phone rang twice before he heard his daughter pick up. "Hello," she said sleepily. "Jen, where have you been? I've been trying to call you."
"Oh, hi, Dad. I'm sorry. I had to study last night and my battery died, so I shut my phone off and plugged it into the charger. I'm still in bed, but I just turned it back on a few minutes ago. Hey, why are you calling so early? Is something wrong? I would have called you as soon as I got up. What's up?"
Mason could picture his techie daughter rolling over and turning on her phone as soon as she woke up. At least she didn't mention rolling over to greet the football player that Marcy had implanted in his brain. He chose his words carefully. "Honey, I just wanted you to know that your mother had some things come up, so she's gone out of town for a few days. She didn't tell me where she was going. I know it's private, and I respect that. I know I'll hear from her soon." There was silence on the other end of the phone.
"What? She left without telling you where she was going? That doesn't sound like Mom. What's going on? Have you tried calling her since she left?"
Mason knew he wouldn't be able to put much over on his astute daughter, so he elaborated a bit more. "Sweetie, honestly, I'm not sure. I woke up the morning after our anniversary and your mother was gone. She must have left sometime during the night, and I can't imagine why. It makes no sense. We had had a beautiful day together and a lovely evening having dinner and drinking wine. I've already called the police and filed a missing person report. Jen, I wish I understood what's happening.
I'm not sure, but it looks like she may have withdrawn money from our bank account, too.
I haven't heard a word from her since she left. Mason hesitated, but then held true to his game plan and omitted any word of the threatening phone call or the fact that his running shoes were being held as evidence in a murder investigation. There was no need to share that with Jennifer. There was a sharp intake of breath, followed by more silence at the end of the line. Then finally,
"This is awful, Dad. I'm scared for Mom. I'm coming home to be with you. Unless you two are having trouble and just haven't told me yet, I think something has happened to her. She would never just leave in the middle of the night."
"No," Mason replied quickly, trying to be reassuring. "Jen, I want you to stay there for now. You need to study. And it's a 4-hour drive from Miami back here. There's nothing you can do here anyway, not right now. The $10,000 transfer is a good indication that nothing has happened to her. She's just sorting something out. I'm doing everything I can. We'll stay in touch. You can text or call me anytime you want, and I'll keep you posted when we find out more. Please do this for me, Jen. It's how you can be the most help right now. And besides, I have Marcy here to help out."
"Oh, God, Dad. Marcy? Isn't she the one who said Mom would be better off with someone other than you?"
"Yes, but she was just kidding, honey. That's how Marcy is. She's being very supportive and a huge help right now. I know this is hard, but just try to stay calm and keep studying. Your mom and I are both very proud of you and want you to be the best that you can be. I promise I will get to the bottom of this and keep you informed. I know it's easy to say, but please try not to worry." Mason could sense that his daughter was trying to digest everything he had just told her. He waited patiently for her to respond, and when she did, he could tell that she was close to tears. She told him in a trembling voice that she knew her mom wouldn't just run away without a good reason. She rationalized that her mom would be back soon and that everything would be clear. That was exactly the response that Mason was hoping for from their pragmatic daughter.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.